This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's Entertainment Technology World. We're about to talk to Mike Travers, who's the Managing Technical Director at Blue Sky Studios in New York. Welcome to Utopia Media's Entertainment Technology World.
Thank you.
We're mainly going to talk about robots, but maybe you could give us a little background about Blue Sky Studios first.
Blue Sky Studios is a CG feature film production facility based in New York. We're a wholly owned entity that's part of 20th Century Fox, which is a underneath the parent company, News Corporation.
Okay, and how exactly does it fit into the News Corp structure, and how does it relate to 20th Century Fox Studios and Fox Animation, which I assume is part of 20th Century Fox Studios?
Fox Animation is a subdivision of 20th Century Fox, and Blue Sky Studios is a controlled company under Fox Animation. We produce films for Fox Animation and Fox Animation only, and the development work is for projects that we do are shared both on the West Coast and the East Coast, but main CG feature film production is done through Blue Sky Studios for Fox Animation.
Okay. I made a short list here, and I'm wondering if you want compare technically and artistically and maybe a little bit about how they're structured with some of your competing CG effect studios: Industrial Light and Magic, ImageWorks, Pixar, and DreamWorks. How would you say you fit into the ecology of these high-tech effect companies?
Well, that's a tough question. I think all studios come to the table with different specialties and different expertise.
Right.
All have evolved in different ways. You mentioned some visual effects companies. In fact, Blue Sky Studios was once a visual effects company that got into the business of feature animation once we produced The Short Bunny in 1998, which won the Academy Award for Best Animated Short. You mentioned DreamWorks, you mentioned Pixar. Those companies both started off purely as feature animation companies and have been that way ever since. I think that in the ecology, technically, of these companies, some have strengths that are in the visual effects world. Certainly ILM and Sony ImageWorks are world class in that respect. But both have been actively looking to get into the business of feature animation, which is really, I think, a great way for those companies to balance the workload for their staffing, since these features take so long to make. It's a great way to mitigate the flow and of talent and balance things, whereas feature animation companies have just been in the business since the day they started.
Okay. Could you just say a little bit about what people don't know much about the competition among these companies for both to win awards, to recruit the best people, to get the most interesting assignments? Would you characterize it as friendly or brutal, the competition among and between all of these groups?
I think that it's a small, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, the work that's being chased after from a visual effects standpoint, I mean, arguably it's all very, very competitive. The visual effects companies are looking to secure projects that are attached to ongoing live-action feature film projects, and of course there's a limited number of big, you know, high-profile productions going on in any given year, so there's a lot of competition there. And I think the competition in the realm of feature animation is in a slightly different respect, and that is really, it shares some things with the visual effects. The labor competition is tremendous. Us competing to get the best talent here on the East Coast and competing against Pixar and DreamWorks to get the best people, that's a common issue among everyone, and there's a fair amount of movement between companies.
Right.
But I think the competition from a business standpoint of doing the feature animations is got to do with release dates and timings of films, and
right.
That you see where release dates get juggled around, and you know, there's a little dance that's played among different studios in that respect.
There's a lot of talk here, and I'm in Los Angeles, a few miles away from Burbank. There's a lot of talk about runaway production. Are the situation with Blue Sky and these other effects and animation houses in general, is most of the animation power in the world based in these American companies, or is there significant competition from Asia or Europe from where you sit?
Right now, we are, you know, the primary production houses are all domestic production houses.
Right.
And there have been and always have been, or at least within the last decade or two, you know, there's been a fair amount of 2D animation that's been outsourced, and we're seeing some studios come online in other countries. I mean, France actually has always had a presence in CG forever. Asia's coming online pretty strong with some startups there.
So the competition is not just among the people and among the companies, but it's global and worldwide now.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, say a little bit about your position at Blue Sky and what your responsibilities are as a part of it.
The position that I hold is basically the supervision of the technical aspects of production. I meet with and all of the leads of the various departments, from modeling, lighting, layout, animation, so on and so forth, discuss the ongoing issues that are related to production, how we can best produce the film, and what software needs to be developed, what's the best way to execute certain projects, what issues might we have that we can't necessarily accomplish, and communicating those issues back to the director and the producers to either come up with workarounds, come up with better ways to accomplish things, or just inform the fact that you know, the time in order to accomplish certain tasks maybe need to be changed or adjusted.
Was your background, if it's possible to distinguish, but more artistic or more technological?
I came up through the artist ranks. Although my actual background and education is somewhat technical, I was an effects artist for years, actually with some visual effects companies on the West Coast before coming to Blue Sky in 2000, and then moved into this role shortly after I got here. But my role is a combination. You know, you can't make an informed judgment about anything if you're thinking about a problem in a vacuum. You really need to be taking into both the creative and the technical and the producing elements of anything.
Right. Now, people often distinguish between personalities or people who are more technological or more artistic, but from what you just said, obviously, animation is probably the most affected by the fact that the people there need to be both. What could you say about that as a psychological or employment issue about how you find people who understand both sides of that relationship?
It's very, very challenging for us to find people that are have that kind of balance. And in the most cases, people aren't, you know, 100% on either side, technical or artistic. People generally have a bias.
Right.
And what the process here is about is trying to combine those elements, those groups of people in such a way where, you know, people might be slightly stronger artistically combined with someone who might be slightly stronger technically.
Right.
To ultimately get the best out of people.
Right, okay. Talk about Chris Wedge and his role in the company and his role with this film.
Chris Wedge is the director of the film, and he is also the head of all creative development within the company. So he has the biggest part to play in terms of executing the vision of the story with robots. It was his project very, very early on. Where a short was produced prior to my arrival at Blue Sky, which was sort of the seed of the idea of getting robots started, and was something he always wanted to do as a project. And he is the main creative driver of the company, and really what ultimately ends up put on screen with robots is the largest component creatively is really coming through him.
So it wasn't Rupert Murdoch or somebody over at 20th Century Fox who said, make something about robots. It came from Chris.
Absolutely.
Okay. And did he need to sell it to anyone in the hierarchy before he could do it?
Of course. Actually, that film was what he wanted to do, I believe, before Ice Age.
Right.
But it hadn't, you know, germinated creatively long enough in terms of having a script and a story. He knew
right.
he wanted to make a film about robots, but Ice Age was ready, so the studio wanted that to go forward first, and in the course of doing Ice Age, it gave time to really kind of bang on the robot story and get that into place.
Okay, were you there to work on Ice Age?
Yes.
What did you do there?
It was the same. My role was the same for Ice Age as it was for Robots.
Okay. Say a little bit more then about how, after Chris had the idea, it started to evolve. And we don't have a lot of time here, but if you could just sort of touch the main points in how the film evolved from the idea into the finished product.
Basically, it starts off with a pitch. Early development is all about just coming up with high-level concepts about what the story will be about, what will happen in that environment. He knew what it was. He knew what the environment was about, and it starts from there. And then the studio either approves or disapproves of that idea. Of course, in this case, they approve the high-level concept. From there, it goes to screenwriters who then try to flush out that concept.
Now the
pitch into
right.
a script.
Right. Now the people who did that for Robots, this was their first animated feature.
I believe so. They were comedy writers who'd done live action work.
Then. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Did they have any particular transitional issues in writing for animation versus live action?
The writing process for animation is a little more of an evolution. Your live action, typically it's a shooting script. Live action productions happen very quickly, so there aren't that many changes that happen to the script during production. Whereas in animation, it's a very you know, you try things, you change the script, you try things, change the script, just to really make it work. And I think that might have been the area of adjustment for these writers, is that it is a longer commitment to the final product.
Right. Okay. Say a little bit more about that need to constantly revise as it affects both the creative and technical parts of the film. How complicated is it to monitor all of those changes and all of the changes that they require peripherally and contributorily as the process goes forward?
It you know, ideally you had a script day one and you just go out and make that script, but a script is so abstract compared to how the movie actually plays up on boards and on the screen when it's finally animated. So we have engineered our entire process to work within that kind of framework to be able to adjust and adapt quickly to changes coming down the line to make the movie and the film ultimately better. And that's, you know, a large part of what I, you know, what I try to do in my job.
Right. So in addition to the technical aspects, the artistic aspects, there are the essentially logistic aspects and organizational aspects that are really competitive elements in making one company better than another, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Okay. The film's called Robots. There have been plenty of robots in film. Gort in The Day the Earth Stood Still, and the robots in Metropolis, and there's a whole lot more. What, if anything, did you rely upon in previous film history, or where did the ideas of how these robots were going to be like come from?
Well, the sort of creative look and vision was inspired from Bill Joyce, and he has a very unique style to his work. I think the overall creative theme to what we wanted to do with this film, with the robots, was to make them unique, make them something that hadn't been done before, and most importantly, I think robots, the word implies in most people's heads something cold and maybe distant and lifeless, and that was something that we wanted to flip on its head and really make these characters come to life and be warm and lovable.
Okay, say something about Ice Age as a precursor at Blue Sky for robots. Were there major artistic and technical challenges that were resolved during Ice Age that paved the way for it being easier as you did robots?
Absolutely. We really ironed out our main production pipeline during Ice Age. The studio went from something like 40, 50 people when it first started up to the peak of around 200 and change. And during the course of Ice Age was, you know, we figured out everything about how to make one of these films efficiently.
Right.
And in so doing, we weren't particularly efficient during the course of it, but we learned a lot of lessons during the making of Ice Age and applied those to robots to make it as easy as we could to produce.
Okay, now you're going to be making Ice Age 2, so presumably you're even in better shape in doing that.
You know, exactly. It's just taking lessons learned from each successive production and trying to apply to that next production some of those good ideas and try to drop the things that really didn't work.
Okay. We're going to just focus on one technical issue here. Ray tracing. What is it? How does it work? Why is it important?
Ray tracing is a type of rendering.
Tell people what rendering is.
Rendering is just simply it describes actually the computer's drawing the image, the 3D image, and the process with which you can do that, ray tracing versus scanline rendering, is just it's a mathematical method where ray tracing is we would argue very strongly that it is a mathematically efficient and correct way to yield a better, more realistic looking image. And because we choose that method, it affects our production in that it makes the job of our lighters and all of our artists actually easier, because less work is required to ultimately make the image look as good as it can because of the method we've chosen to actually render the images.
Now, does that method take a lot of compute cycles?
It is certainly more compute intensive than scanline rendering, but for us, the trade-off of man versus machine, it's a far better use of people's time to let the machines do the extra work than to have people doing extra work.
Are you able to do all that computing in-house, or do you end up renting grid space, or how do you get the cycles to do
it? We have all the compute power in-house. We have an R&D and software engineering group that are constantly refining the software code to run more efficiently. It's amazing how much faster the software runs from the beginning of Ice Age to where we ended up on robots. It's probably four times faster just to draw the same image, just based on years of experience in different situations to hone the algorithms that make the images work.
Say a little bit about the dialectical relationship between what you do and how the computing industry produces machines to do things faster and better. Do you take advantage of them, or do you put demands on them that drive it back to get better results? And how does, within the company, or even within for the whole animation industry, for the whole computing industry?
We work very closely with our hardware suppliers, and we're always pushing them. We're on the bleeding edge, and we're never happy. We never have enough in terms of compute power. So we are forced to
Scotty saying, more power, more power.
Exactly. No matter how much we have, we could use more. It would make our product better. Every compute cycle we get, the more we have, it translates to just better imagery on screen. And so we push very hard on our hardware suppliers to provide the latest and greatest technology and to make it in such a way that works within our production flow.
Okay. I interviewed Bob Gordon a few days ago. What's his role in the process? How does he relate to Blue Sky?
He is the vice president of production for Fox Animation. So he oversees the overall production, similar to the head of production would for the 20th Century Fox on the lot, the studio side. He's got a tremendous amount of experience and insight into how to produce these films, and his main job is to oversee the producers on the film, work with the producers and directors to facilitate the movie happening, and making sure that from the studio standpoint Blue Sky has the resources it needs to execute the film as efficiently as possible.
Okay. When we talked, we talked about putting robots on IMAX and on digital cinema. What's involved from your point of view in adapting the film to those media, and did it help that the film was digitally generated in the first place?
It's a relatively simple process in the essence that we... IMAX has a DMR process, which basically takes our output imagery that we would use for our normal 35mm theatrical release prints. They take that digital data, and then they run it through a digital process, and then it is prepared for IMAX output and prints. So the actual method to release on IMAX what we did for Robots was relatively straightforward, and the fact that our images, our source images, are digital only speeds that process further.
Okay, what about digital cinema? How important is that to I'm going to be attending a screening on Monday to see Robots in digital cinema format. What was involved in creating that? Maybe say a little about the decision to release it in digital cinema format.
Digital cinema probably best replicates what we see when we finish the imagery, because we're all digital, all we see then is a digital environment where we essentially final approve our imagery in a digital environment. The process of putting our images on film is a fairly technical process of evaluating film stocks and laboratory chemicals to get the lookup tables to work so that when you output your digital images to film, they look like they did when they were digital.
Right.
When you output straight to digital and for digital projection, it's a straight shot, and it's a very true representation of what we really intended for the images to look like.
So in fact, having to put it on film, whether IMAX or regular film, is kind of a step down from your ideal concept.
It's just, I don't want to say it's a step down, because
right.
Film has a lot of richness that it brings to the viewing experience, but for sure there's an extra step there that's not as natural as if we were filming live action and shooting the source imagery right on negative.
Right, because it's never seen film to
correct
to start
up to
with.
That point.
Okay, why don't we wrap up here with some sort of big think questions, if we could, that you can address as briefly or as much length as you want. At this point, do you feel there are any limits other than human imagination, time, and the amount of money people have to what stories and what images can be created with digital technology?
No, I don't. I think we're on the very, very early edge of what's there in terms of digital filmmaking, and I think that we're going to see some amazingly different looks from the different studios that are going to completely change people's ideas of what seeing a 3D animated feature is all about.
So this is really early days in terms of what's being done in digital animation.
Completely. It's the Wild West right now.
Okay. Just say a little bit about the success of Ice Age and the success of Robots so far. You seem to be doing pretty well.
Yeah, everybody likes to have a few solid films under their belt. Ice Age was a huge hit for the studio, and Robots is doing well, and so it just helps build momentum for the studio to, you know, going into the future to make more and better films and improve on the things we've done in the past.
Okay, good. I hope we can talk to you about those too as they move forward in production and distribution.
Sure thing.
Thanks very much for talking to us. I'll let you get back to the animation process.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye.